Chapter 12. Dealing with Conflict. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that this is the one area that terrifies most managers and leaders. Over a number of decades of coaching, it is by far the most common conversation that I have, and it's about how to manage conflict. It is the one area that leaders will lie awake at night worrying about. They lose sleep over it. They feel anxious and at times nauseous. They often lose their appetite or experience diarrhea. They put it off. They hope it will all go away. As someone once said, 95% of conflict is over opinions and feelings rather than facts. The reality is that conflict and difficult people are inevitable anywhere you go. It would probably be more peaceful if it was not the case, but the fact is, if you only put two people on the same planet, sooner or later they would tread on each other's toes, if only by accident. The frequency of having to deal with difficult people varies enormously, and some unfortunate individuals are forced to tolerate an almost continuously hostile environment. Individuals react in a variety of ways, countering aggression with aggression, or alternatively withdrawing, becoming depressed and/or excessively anxious. Hostility exists because people, at work, home and play, are competing for promotion, remuneration and power because of the personalities involved. The reasons for people being difficult, aggressive, and angry are complex, but not very helpful for a leader who is trying to deal with a hostile or difficult person. Charlie Chapman once said, "I am at peace with God. My conflict is with man." Another problem is that at work, for example, you do not choose the people that you work with or the customers, clients, patients who come to you. Often, we are thrust into an organization or group where we have to work or relate to people whom we would normally try to avoid. So what are the formulas for handling this obviously difficult area of leadership? Let's look at some scenarios. Team member comes to you all fired up. There are a number of steps involved, and if you remember to follow them, then the chances are that you will successfully manage that staff member who comes to you with an issue, especially if they seem tense, annoyed, or visibly angry, or perhaps sad or overwhelmed. You could, in fact, rightfully use the GRODO model here too. That was in Chapter 10, page 151. In that such a framework works well in conflictual situations. Nevertheless, see the steps below. Number 1. Put your protective shield up. This is not the time to respond immediately, and instead, you need to steady and prepare yourself. Immediately try to picture or imagine a protective shield surrounding you before you respond. Perhaps take a deep breath and pause. Maybe visualize yourself stepping back from the team member's comment and giving yourself some space. This is critical because it buys you a few seconds to examine your critic or your staff member's intentions. Should you explore the criticism further as a possible way to grow professionally or personally? Or should you dismiss it as only a hurtful message? Where is this message coming from? What's the agenda here? Number 2, remain calm. Do not get defensive. If necessary, try to look poker-faced. Don't allow the team member to think that they have caught you off guard or off balance. Number 3. Stop, look, and listen. As has been indicated above, this is the number one rule in the list of listening skills. See Chapter 9, page 127. Give the person your undivided attention. Turn away from the computer screen so you're not distracted. Stop what you're doing and look at them. Number 4. Paraphrase what they just said. Again, this is a critical listening skill. See how important listening is in all sorts of situations? Number 5. If they are not happy with what you just said, paraphrase it again until you get it right. Number 6. Don't block the communication. Don't judge or give an opinion. Don't prematurely give a quick solution. This is a surefire way to kill the conversation, in that a quick fix may be the wrong solution, and besides, it says that you really haven't heard the full story, and it smacks a tad of being defensive because you're just rushing to get it over and done with. It will probably also inflame the situation. And don't dodge the issue and talk about an allied situation or try to placate the person, which also smacks of being defensive. Number 7. Put yourself in their shoes. Try to see it from their angle. This is called empathy, seeing the situation from their perspective. Remember, this conversation is not about you, it's about them. Number 8. Ask questions. Again, a key listening skill. Ask questions to clarify what they might have said to really ensure that you've heard exactly what they wish to say. Ask questions to get more of the history of the situation. Number 9. Restate the problem. Make sure again that you're on target. Number 10. Now seek a solution. Either ask them for what they think will solve the matter, or provide a solution yourself, but offer it tentatively. Or say that both you and them ought to think about it and make another time to discuss. Number 11. Find a point of agreement if possible. It could simply be arranging the next meeting time. Number 12. Respond visibly with action. Write something down, make a call, etc. Number 13. Restate or summarise what action can be taken to handle this situation. These are the steps that will ensure that you don't inflame the situation or make it worse in any way. These simple steps will allow you the opportunity to dissolve the tension and seek about finding a collaborative solution. Benjamin Watson once said, "Conflict, when handled correctly, strengthens." You go to the team member with an issue. How do you communicate in a straightforward, genuine manner without creating defensiveness or hostility from the staff member? How can you discuss with the team member in such a way that you do not intentionally offend them? Professor Kim Cameron, in his 2013 book titled Practicing Positive Leadership, provided an important distinction. One of the most important attributes of being supportive in your communication is the ability to be descriptive rather than evaluative in the delivery of the message. In other words, evaluative communication gives a judgment, provides an opinion, or places a label on individuals or their behaviour. For example, comments such as, "You did it all wrong," or "It's your fault," or "You are ineffective," are all evaluative in style. They do not suspend judgment. They are generally critical and fault-finding. Needless to say, individuals who receive such evaluative statements generally feel attacked and tend to retreat and become defensive or occasionally aggressive or hostile. Naturally enough, they push back and defend themselves by proclaiming that they are not wrong, or it was not their fault, or that they are very capable as individuals. In contrast, descriptive comments are far more objective in kind and allow the leader to be more congruent and authentic in the delivery of the message. Descriptive communication involves 3 steps. Number 1. Describe the event, behaviour, or circumstance objectively. Number 2. Describe outcomes and or feelings and not the other person's attributes. And 3. Suggest alternative solutions that could resolve the issue. When you have to say something you don't think someone else, including a team member, will enjoy hearing, be brief, use carefully worded I statements, not you statements, and relax by being prepared. If you wish to really think through the issue and get your thoughts straight, then please see Appendix 5, which is preparing an issue for discussion. Try this step-by-step sequence. Note, steps 1 to 4 are all said in the one whole statement. Step 1. Describe how you feel about starting the discussion. I am, and you insert your feeling, about discussing this because, and you insert the reason. Let me give you an example. I am hesitant about discussing this because I don't want you to get this out of proportion. I'm reticent about discussing this because I don't want you to get it out of perspective. Or, I'd like to talk to you about something. Will this time work? Or, can I give you some feedback? It's important how you start the conversation. It needs to be done in such a way as to flag that there is a serious side to what you're about to say. Most leaders don't know how to start a conversation when they are about to give negative feedback. They might go softly, softly and talk about the weather or the latest sports results. And if they do that, then how on earth do they turn the conversation around to get where they want to go? Further, engaging in polite chatter first up is a kind of deceptive way to begin. And I've certainly heard team members get annoyed that they were called into the boss's office and it was all pally-pally and then they had a bomb dropped on them. Step 2. Describe what happened. When I saw or heard, and you insert whatever it is. For example, when I see you coming into the meeting late and then roll your eyes at what others are saying. It is important, as indicated above, to be able to clearly describe the behaviour that is obvious and can be seen or heard. It then doesn't become your opinion or evaluative in nature. However, please note that because most individuals will not act up in front of the boss, you as the leader may only get to learn about any poor behaviour through hearsay. It is important then to act on that hearsay. If you happen to be wrong in your hearsay, it still gives the team member the opportunity to clarify what is going on and give their explanation. Even if they deny the apparent hearsay, although it may be true, it sends a clear message that you are aware of what is going on. Generally, though, in my experience, where there is smoke, there is fire. Step 3. Describe what effect it had on you and others. Then I assumed, felt, had to, and you insert your comment. For example, then it impacted the others in the group, with some getting upset and others getting annoyed. Again, stay with what you observed and what you saw or heard, even if it is hearsay. Step 4. Describe what you would like now and indicate a willingness to compromise. For example, what I'd like now is, you state your solution, but maybe there is something I haven't thought of or something that I've missed. Now stop and wait for their response. Note that this section above, in bold, the bit about there is something maybe I haven't thought of or that I've missed, is important because it provides a willingness to compromise as well as being a qualifier in that it is possible that you may in fact have missed or overlooked something. Other examples about things you could say could include, next time I'd like to see, whatever solution it is, actually happen. What thoughts do you have on how this might be resolved? Or, how can we prevent this from happening again? Or, instead, can you do whatever it is? Step 5. Listen carefully to their response. This is a critical time where you really need to use your listening skills. Drill down and inquire further if necessary by asking key questions. Take your time to really understand what is going on. Inquire into the team members' views. Use paraphrasing, acknowledgement of their feelings, and summarizing. Do a perception check. Dig for full understanding. Don't be satisfied with the surface response. Often, they may try to fob you off, so ask further questions. Make sure your staff member knows that you fully understand and acknowledge his or her position and interests. Step 6. If they become defensive. It is possible that the team member might push back in any number of ways, but you simply use your listening skills and continue to ask questions, then you can stay in control of the conversation. Sometimes the staff member might get hostile, demand who told you these things, ask questions and push back, debate the issue, cry or withdraw. It is important not to be put off. Sometimes these particular ploys are manipulative, and other times they might be genuine. Just use your reflective listening techniques and stay with the issue. Listening is the key here. Step 7. Push for a solution or outcome. If necessary, keep repeating your solution or outcome, unless, of course, the team member or the both of you come up with a better one. Set a time when the situation will be reviewed again. This might be in 1 or 2 weeks' time, but should be no longer than 3 weeks if at all possible. It's called accountability, and it serves to ensure that there is a review time and that the conversation just wasn't a one-hit wonder or a flash in the pan, as it were. Team member with a mental health issue. How do you approach a team member whom you suspect might have a mental health issue? In my experience, most managers and leaders tend to shy away from mental health issues for a number of reasons. First, they actually don't know what to do and secretly just hope that it all goes away. Second, they are afraid of exacerbating the issue or somehow making it worse. What if statements run through their head? What if they had a nervous breakdown after I spoke to them? What if they went off and suicided, which all means they put off approaching a staff member? Someone once said, "People do not care what you know until they know that you care." The major mental health issues are generally going to be either anxiety or depression, and sometimes anger. Occasionally, there might be alcoholism, gambling addiction, bipolar disorder, borderline personality disorder, obsessive compulsive disorder, and perhaps a combination of these in some form. Irrespective, I have outlined the common red flags or telltale signs that are easy to spot in another book titled The Dark Clouds at Work, which is available in either hard copy, Kindle, or audio at depressionatwork.com. The recipe for what to do with a probable mental health issue could follow these lines. 1. Observe. Clearly, most managers and leaders have little difficulty in recognizing that specific staff members might be off their game or not themselves lately. For depressives, for instance, that might look like decreased energy and productivity, inability to concentrate, forgetfulness, inability to organize or delegate tasks, making frequent mistakes, absenteeism, and maybe problems with other staff members in a lack of cooperation or conflict. Number 2, offer feedback. Find a private occasion to talk to them and tell them what you've noticed, and then ask if anything is wrong or if they are really okay. It is important to say what you've seen because this gives extra credibility to the question about how they might be doing. It also shows that you care. It's also important that such feedback is given in a constructive, non-threatening way. For example, "I've noticed lately that you seem very sluggish and look tired, and your dress sense has dropped off, so I'm wondering how you're doing right now." Or, "I've been aware that you don't come to our happy hours or birthday lunches anymore. Is everything all right?" Or, "I've noticed that you seem more short and abrupt than you used to be, and I'm wondering what might be going on with you." Number 3. Listen. Use your listening skills and tune in to what they might say. Try to understand their perspective, paraphrase what they say, and repeat it back to them. use statements such as, "What you're saying is," or "What I heard you say was." Perhaps too, they could get defensive or try to brush it all aside. "It's nothing really, or it's just a personal matter." Don't be put off. Repeat what you've seen or heard and stay true to your conversation. Even if it is a personal matter, their general presentation, their demeanour, and or their productivity is affecting the workplace, so it is a matter for you to have to deal with. Number 4, refer. Naturally enough, as a manager, you are not expected to know how to solve this matter, and therefore you need to refer them onto the employee assistance program, for example. Alternatively, encourage them to make an appointment with their doctor or a clinical psychologist. Help them get more information about the symptoms, causes, and treatment of their condition or their situation. Number 5, follow up. As a leader, you need to continue to show support. Follow up and ask how it all turned out. Keep in continued liaison with the team member on a regular basis and ensure that they are getting the help that they need and require. Mediating between team members. As indicated previously, people have a habit of stepping on one another's toes and egos get put out, and people often get hurt or offended. This might mean that individuals avoid each other or have little to do with each other, or they might be openly sharing barbs and caustic comments, or perhaps they could be indulging in gossip, rumour, and innuendo. Regardless, none of this is helpful for team dynamics, and if left unchecked, can impact team morale and team culture. As the leader, this is not something that is naturally going to go away, and you need to intervene. How you do this is called mediation. In my experience, this is not something that needs to be referred to the HR department or to the Employee Assistance Program, the EAP, because this only tends to blow it all out of proportion. You also lose control as the leader of the process and what is happening and have little idea what is going on between the team members involved. It is highly advisable that you be the mediator and stay in control. This does not have to be unnecessarily complicated. There are particular steps, as outlined below, that simply means that you need to have your listening skills well-tuned and you need to be able to ask good questions. The model for mediation. The purpose of mediation is to help people who are in some sort of conflict to get to the bottom of their own problems and to help them devise their own solutions. The role of the mediator or leader is to act as a go-between for the people in dispute. Let each person present his or her own side of the conflict. It is not a formal process as such. It is an opportunity for the two parties to work out their own solutions with a third person or mediator present. It is not appropriate for third parties or support persons to be present. Again, this is a mediation process where the two persons involved sort out their own situation and come to a resolution themselves about how to work together. Mediation deals directly with the relationship between the two people in conflict. The question of right and wrong is not important. Mediation is concerned with the future actions and behaviour of both people in dispute. What is the best agreement that can be worked out by both people which avoids the problem once they leave mediation? How can both team members best act towards one another when they come into conflict after they leave mediation? How can they best work together? They don't have to like each other, but they do have to get on. A key point to note that during the mediation, when trying to get the people in conflict to come to an agreement, the mediator or leader also helps the individuals to understand what consequences await them should they fail to reach an agreement through mediation. Often, if the individuals involved cannot work out their own solutions to the problem, then the organisation may intervene and bring about less desired solutions. People need to understand this. The steps for mediation. Step 1. The leader meets separately with the individuals who are in conflict. Each person tells his or her story, how he or she feels about the problem, and how he or she believes that the situation can be remedied or what kind of solution can be found. It is the leader's job to simply listen and understand the individual's story without taking sides, laying blame, or in any way finding fault. The leader's job is to be entirely neutral and to push each person to come up with various solutions to their issues. Step 2. The individuals concerned then return for an additional face-to-face discussion together after having met separately in the first instance. Generally speaking, this is usually only for one face-to-face meeting. But it could also be the case that additional meetings need to be held until there is a possible solution to the problem. The leader tries to help the people in conflict work out whatever misunderstanding and bad feelings they may have toward one another and how these feelings can be resolved. Before I start this step 2 with the two individuals concerned, I hand out my ground rules, which sets the expectations for what I expect to happen in such a meeting. See Appendix 6 for those rules. Both parties are expected to sign before the session begins. This is important because it sets the scene for the interaction, and if either staff member gets out of line in any way, then you can rightly point to the rules which they had previously agreed to and signed. Step 3. If and when an agreement is reached by the people who are in conflict, they are brought together to write up and sign their agreement. Although the discussions are private and confidential, the final agreement is written up so that there is no misunderstanding between the two parties, and so that you as the leader know how to manage each party in the light of the agreement that has been worked out. Step 4. The leader meets with the parties to review the agreement and how it is working. This is generally a week or two later, with further reviews as necessary, say 1 month later and then 2 months later. It is important to ensure that the agreement sticks and that the agreed behaviours and communications are being maintained. Don't believe for a moment that simply because two individuals sign an agreement that they will demonstrate impeccable behaviour and attitude. You need to monitor the situation until you are satisfied that it is being sustained. If both parties are still happy with their progress after, say, 3 months, then mediation is deemed to be concluded. Chapter 12, Summary. Dealing with conflict. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that handling conflict is the one area that terrifies most managers and leaders. This chapter looks at a number of scenarios that might arise in the workplace and examines how to deal with them. The team member comes to you all fired up. There are 13 steps involved. That means if you remember to follow them, then the chances are that you will successfully manage that staff member who comes to you with an issue, especially if they seem tense, annoyed, or visibly angry, or perhaps sad or overwhelmed. You go to the team member with an issue. How do you communicate in a straightforward, genuine manner without creating defensiveness or hostility from the staff member? How can you discuss with the team member in such a way that you do not intentionally offend them? One of the most common attributes of being supportive in your communication is the ability to be descriptive rather than evaluative in the delivery of the message. In this respect, there are 7 specific steps to follow to ensure that you as the leader get your message across. Team member with a mental health issue. How do you approach a team member whom you suspect might have a mental health issue? In my experience, most managers and leaders tend to shy away from mental health issues for a number of reasons. The simple formula, though, in order to assist is as follows. Observe, offer feedback, listen, refer, follow up. These actions have a good chance of being helpful and can prevent the problem from escalating. Mediating between team members. People have a habit of stepping on one another's toes. As a result, this might mean that individuals avoid each other or have little to do with each other, or they might be openly sharing barbs and caustic comments, or perhaps they could be indulging in gossip, rumour and innuendo, all of which impacts team morale and culture. As a leader, the most appropriate way to intervene is to undertake a mediation process. The model for mediation. The purpose of mediation is to help people who are in some sort of conflict to get to the bottom of their own problems and to help them devise their own solutions. The steps for mediation. There are four steps to this process, which ends with a signed written agreement between the two parties about how to resolve their issue or issues. It is important, though, to follow up such an agreement on a regular basis to see that the agreement has stuck. Don't believe for a moment that simply because staff have agreed to certain actions in front of you as their leader, that they will be faithful to those agreements. You need to follow up, and follow up some more, not only to show staff that you mean business, but to ensure that their new behaviours and attitudes become a way of being and are sustained over time.